Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, May the 17th, 2021. This is Air Force veteran David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. We have lots of information of interest to veterans and their families. But to get things rolling, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard. How you doing?
Hey there, Mr. Corey. How are you?
Hanging in there.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Just another busy Monday after a long and busy weekend. That's what we do here at Corey and Hurley Law Group. I want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, your comments, and your questions. You can call us anytime during the show at 1-888-627-6008. And please call in if you have a question about a VA matter. It might be a veteran and want to talk about your claim, or a family member might want to talk about a loved one's claim, your family member's claim. So, you know, give us a call. We're here for the next hour, and we have lots of news for you, but we can always stop what we're doing and answer whatever questions you have. You know, David, before we get to the show, I got one thing that I want to alert our veterans about and their family members, because I'm seeing this more and more with my Board of Veteran Appeals decisions. So the process, as most people know, is the VA renders a decision. David and I get a hold of it. We see that the decision's flawed, and we file an appeal with the Board of Veteran Appeals, and then we argue the case there. And most of the time, probably all the time, we get a remand back to the VA for, quote-unquote, further development, certain instructions by the Board of Veteran Appeals, and asking the VA to maybe do another examination, whatever the case may be. But what I'm seeing more and more is the VA, they do what they think they're supposed to be doing as far as what the BVA wants them to do. And then we get a decision back, and we could debate whether or not the rating decision was high enough. We can always appeal that again. But what I'm seeing, what's really bothering me these days, is that the VA is giving an effective date, not at the time of the filing of the claim. In other words, not going back as far as they're supposed to be going back, and they're giving a later effective date. And then they try to rationalize why that's the effective date. And, you know, in my personal opinion, I've always said this because I used to do insurance defense work back when I was a civilian lawyer back in New Jersey. You know, it's all about the money, and what the VA is trying to do, and I've got so many examples of this that it's just not a coincidence anymore, is they're trying to limit their exposure on the retro payment to the veteran. And this is a real problem. You know, I just got one again today, came in, and the effective date is March 17th of 2021. The claim was filed in October of 2014.
Wow. Six and a half year difference. Wow.
And you know, they kind of played their hand here, because they gave an earlier effective date for SCARS at 0% effective October of 2014, but on the back issue and on the GERD, they gave an effective date of March 17th, 2021, as opposed to when the claim was filed in October of 2014. And in those two conditions, they gave a rating. They gave 20% on one. They gave 10% on the other. So those should have gone back to October of 2014. You know, so I called my client up, and of course, he was really excited that he got an increase on one of them. And then I said, yeah, but did you see the effective date? And he didn't even think about the effective date. And we had a long discussion about it. And, you know, this is, you know, this happened in a couple of other cases that I've had. And the retro figures were pretty hefty. You know, we're talking six figures for the veteran. Instead, they gave a later effective date, which virtually cut that in half, which, you know, we're forced to appeal again.
Right.
So I want to, you know, alert our veterans out there, whether you're clients of ours or you're being represented by somebody else, you know, the appeal is, there's a bunch of different things that when you appeal. You're appealing service connection issues, you're appealing the rating evaluation, you know, what the amount of the disability, the percentage amount, you're appealing that. But you can never overlook that effective date. And it's very specific as to the application for that effective date. So, you know, David, I ask you to chime in on this too, because
you taught me
all this stuff 9 years ago, and
well,
that was one of the things that you insisted upon, is you got to really check those effective dates.
Well, I can give you an example from one of the longest periods that I've seen of clients I represented was a veteran who had served in Vietnam. He was an infantry marine. He was out in the jungle, you know, and he acquired some disabilities on top of 100% post-traumatic stress. But the specific issue we were trying to service connect had been denied, and we finally won. It took several years of representing him before we won, but we got an effective date. It went back 37 years from 2009,
wow.
from 2009 when we won it to 1972, which was when he had first filed a claim, and that he had been continually keeping it alive, in other words. Okay, the problem was after that long fight to get service connected, which is the first issue, what did the VA do? Exactly what you described. They came back and said, okay, that condition, only 10%. And, you know, to make a long story short, over the next about 5 years, it took further appeals, and it was sort of, you know, the case bouncing back and forth between the Board of Veterans Appeals, an appeal up to the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, back to the BVA, back to the regional office, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But finally we got that, what had been a 10% rating. You know, they went back to retro, gave them 10%. We got that up to 60%, which was realistically the most we were going to get. But we were able to get the 60% all the way back to 1972. So you have to fight. The VA does it. Like you say, it's not a coincidence. And you know, yes, the law does recognize what the VA will refer to as staged ratings. Like if a veteran's disability worsens, the rating may be in different stages. It might be 30% for this period of time, then maybe 50% for some later period of time. But to get to it, to be legitimate, they have to make findings of fact to support it. They can't simply pick what probably happened, I bet, and Rick, you can tell me if I'm mistaken, in this case you were describing, they just picked the most recent C&P exam from March of 2017, I'm guessing, and then just extrapolate that all the way back without analyzing any of the evidence or even asking for a medical opinion based on the evidence and the veteran's own testimony, written statements, et cetera, to even determine whether a stage rating should be appropriate or not. And I'm not conceding it would be. It could be that, you know, the highest rating should go all the way back to the date of the claim, you know. So, but unfortunately, what this means is the case isn't over, you know, and mm-hmm. back and forth, more appeals, the board, fortunately, and Rick, I, you know, share your thoughts on this. In recent years, the Board of Veterans Appeals, I think, has been doing its job pretty well. I mean, there's probably 100 judges on the board supported by hundreds of staff attorneys. I think that they've the sort of current generation of judges are far more thorough and conscientious in correctly applying the law than maybe 20 years ago. But it still requires having to appeal it and then probably getting another remand until you get it right. But as we've talked about many times on the show, the thing is you can't quit. You got to identify the issue and then file the appeal and be prepared to keep fighting and then go from there.
But, yeah, and I've maintained this from day one, having been in the, I like to call it, my non-VA work as my civilian world, and having done a lot of insurance work, and I was in-house counsel for insurance companies. You know, the playbook that the insurance companies used is the exact same playbook that the VA's disability compensation benefits side of the VA is using. And, at the end of the day, it's all about the money. And I've had this discussion with many regional officers who give these ratings out. And a couple of them who I was close to, they'd kind of give me a wink in the eye when I'd say that. And they're like, oh, no. And I just look at it and said, there's absolutely no way you can tell me that this case, that's not what happened. And they would just kind of give me a smirk and a little wink of the eye like, yeah, probably so. At the end of the day, you know, as that combined rating gets closer to 100, they're backing themselves back in to avoid paying the 100. And if they have to stop it, you know, if they can stop it at 70 or 80 or 90, they're going to do that and then force the veteran to appeal again. And so, you know, veterans, the lesson for tonight is keep appealing. If you're, you know, at 70, 80, or 90, and you've got a whole bunch of disabilities there, I'm almost certain that if you go to the doctors and you do what you're supposed to do, you listen to your lawyer or your representative, you'll get to that 100. Because I believe the VA knows that they have to pay the 100, but they're looking to see what they can do to avoid paying the 100. And putting the burden back on you to see whether or not you're going to pursue it. So keep pursuing it. Remember when you get these decisions to look at that effective date, because that's crucial. And David, you're absolutely correct. That's what they did in this one case that I'm referring to. They said that the C&P exam on that date is the one that, you know, that got the rating, you know, got the disability rating to 20%. And rather than retroactive reapply it to October of 2014, they use that date to date of the exam.
Well, there's a lot of case law that uses the terms like they have to base a decision on ratings based on the facts found, which means they have to make findings of fact. They have to discuss it. And we know regional offices across the country are notorious for very, very superficial decisions, maybe one or two or three sentences. But when you get to the Board of Veteran Appeals, you're going to get, I'm not saying perfection because you won't, but you're going to get more thorough analysis because they recognize and they take the law seriously, I think, for the most part, you know. And so, like you say, you got to keep appealing. Rick, I think you must be setting some records for veteran advocacy with the number of BVA hearings you've had in the last year. Let me tell you this story. I had a hearing, a video hearing recently, and when the hearing scheduler came on the video screen, he thought I was you. He thought I was Richard Hurley, and he was so pleased because we were at the same law firm, you know, Corey and Hurley. He was so pleased to finally meet me in person after all he'd heard about all the cases I was doing. And I had to correct him. I said, "You've got my law partner Richard Hurley confused." Anyway, so I thought I'd pass that on.
I've got a bunch. I did last week 16.
Yeah, wow.
And then coming up between next week and the first week of June, I got another 15 or 16, yeah. So,
wow.
But that's all good news, you know. Because we're getting these cases heard before the board, And not only, David, do I agree with you that the board wants to get it right, but they want to get it right for the veteran. You know, I hear this, you know, I hear it all the time. They're in it for the veteran. The regional office, when they make the rating decision, they're in it for the VA. They're not in it for the veteran. They're not giving the veteran the 100% benefit of the doubt that they are entitled to for serving their country. But the Board of Veteran Appeals, that's their job, and they're going to make sure that at the end of the day, it's the consideration about the veteran, what the veteran went through, his service connections, the events that happened to him in service, the disabilities that resulted in his service, and why he's entitled to the compensation that he's entitled to. It has nothing to do with backing in about the money, backing in about the effective date. It has everything to do with what the veteran is entitled to for serving his country.
Yeah, so, that's very true. That's very true. Yeah. And I'm glad the BVA is finally in that mindset. And it's a shame that the regional offices, we can't get the same quality decisions, you know. But
you and I commented a long time ago when the AMA first came out, we use the expression, all they're doing is kicking the can down the road.
Well, kicking it to the BVA. Yeah,
kicking it to the BVA, right.
And what was unknown to us, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when they were discussing this law, what was unknown to us was what kind of job was the board going to do in two things. One, the backlog, taking forever, because our experience, everyone's experience before the Appeals Management Act, was you appeal something from the regional office, and it could literally take you 3 or 4 years to get a BVA hearing, and then another year or two after the hearing to get a decision. So that was a big concern. The other concern was, what's the quality of decisions are we going to be getting? Well, fortunately, both of those concerns have been successfully addressed by the BVA. They are, you know, and with these video hearings, we are able to get hearings relatively quickly compared to before. And number two, you know, the quality decisions are there. But what we're still seeing is what our concern was originally, which was we don't see the quality at regional office improving. And, you know, when they remove the decision review officer and replace it with the higher level review that you're not entitled to a hearing, those are, for the most part, superficial rubber stamping of whatever happened. And the other thing is there are some traps that we've discussed in prior shows that are set by the Appeals Management Act, which deals with the effective dates. Like the Board of Veteran Appeals, they're only going to consider evidence up to the point of the record that existed up to the decision that's being appealed. They no longer accept any information in that interim time. If you've requested a board, let me clarify because this is complicated. If you've requested a board hearing, remember, Rick, they tell us don't submit anything, only submit it at the hearing or within 90 days after. Under the appeals management, you're not supposed to submit matters in that waiting period between the request, between the appeal, and the hearing itself. Now, there are two other lanes, one of which is, supposedly the fastest lane, which is simply based on the record that exists, and then the other lane of review, which is you do get submit additional evidence within 90 days of your appeal being filed, the Notice of Disagreement Board Appeal. So there are some complications, some areas where people can get tripped up. But for the most part, I would give the credit to the BVA, Rick. I don't know what you think, but the BVA has made the Appeals Management Act an apparent success, you know, in that regard. I mean, they've sort of saved it. If the BVA, if we had the same slow Board of Veteran Appeals where it took years to get a hearing, years to get a decision, this would be, you know, a worse situation than before. But I think they've really saved the day, and these virtual hearings have really made all the difference.
Absolutely. And here's another tip that I want to pass along that I use for my hearings, and that is, you know, the veteran may have a half a dozen or more claims that you've got on appeal. Well, you know, as you're preparing for the hearing, and you get ready, you get into that hearing, and before the hearing starts and the judge says, he elicits the claims that are before the board. If you don't feel like you can sustain your burden, which is, again, it's a benefit burden to the veteran. You know, the burden is as likely as not. But if you don't have the medical evidence and it's really not a claim that at the end of the day, you just don't feel comfortable with pursuing, versus some of the other claims that you have before the judge, which are really good claims, and you really want to lead with those. You know, think of it almost in terms of like a lineup on a baseball card. You know, your first four or five hitters are your strong hitters, and then six through nine are kind of your weak hitters. Well, if you got a claim that's kind of six through nine, and you really don't want to pursue it, you don't have the evidence before the judge, and you feel like you might be wasting the judge's time, it's a good time at that moment to tell the judge, you know, judge, I'm going to withdraw that claim. And all that means is that you don't want the judge to consider it in the future. If that particular disability becomes more serious, then by all means, you can reopen that claim, but the effective date changes. I've run into that situation. Now I've been appearing in front of judges, the same judges, a few times now, and one judge recently commented on that when I withdrew a couple of claims, and he had actually prepped the file before our hearing, and in his mind, he didn't think those claims were that good, and he didn't really know where we were going with them. So when I withdrew them, he like took notice. And you know, you kind of get into favoritism of the judge a little bit.
You get more credibility, like I think.
Yeah, that's perfect. More credibility. You're not wasting the court's time. And what you're saying is, judge, I really want you to focus on the back injury, the PTSD, and whatever, you know, whatever else, prostate cancer or whatever. Those are the issues, not the thumb. You know. So anyway, that's just another tip for veterans when you're getting ready to go before the Board of Veteran Appeals. Anything
that's
on that, David,
stuff.
Before we get to the news?
No, that's great stuff. I appreciate you sharing your insight there, Rick. So we got lots of news tonight. We're going to talk about information from two major advocacy organizations, the National Veterans Legal Services Program and Military Veterans Advocacy. But first, we have some news from the VA itself. Rick, I know you've
got
some news from the VA.
Got it right here. Friday, May 14th, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs announced that veterans who were previously denied service connection for an herbicide-related presumptive condition due to lack of in-country Vietnam service will have their claims automatically re-adjudicated by the VA. The department began re-adjudicating claims last month, April 2021, for veterans who served in the offshore waters of the Republic of Vietnam during the Vietnam War but were denied for one or more herbicide-related conditions on the basis that military service was not performed on the landmass of the Republic of Vietnam or in its inland waterways. Re-adjudication means VA will review the evidence of record and provide replacement decisions in the cases of veterans who were previously denied service connection benefits. We have the proper resources in place to meet the needs of our veteran community and will ensure all eligible veterans and their survivor claims are examined thoroughly and fairly. The review also applies to eligible survivors of deceased Vietnam-era veterans and is part of the Veterans Benefit Administration's implementation of the November 5, 2020 U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California order in Niemer versus U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs requiring VA to re-adjudicate previously denied claims. The VA will determine if benefits for qualifying disabilities can now be paid retroactively to the date of previously denied claims. And we're getting back to the retroactive issue. The court's decision requires automatic re-adjudication in such cases without requiring a new claim and potentially paying benefits to the survivors or estates of deceased beneficiaries. More information is available regarding VA disability benefits based on the VA's website. Over to you, David.
Thanks. Those of you that may have just tuned in, I want to remind you this is a call-in show. If you have any comments or questions for Richard Hurley or myself, David Corey, please call in. Our nationwide toll-free number is, if you grab a pen and paper, toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. That's 1-888-627-6008 here at the Veterans News Hour. I'd like to now turn our attention to some news thanks to the National Veterans Legal Services Program, and their website is nvlsp.org. That's National Veterans Legal Services Program, nvlsp.org. In particular, I want to share with you and then discuss, as I'm presenting this, and Rick, get your thoughts, the testimony of Bart Stichman, the co-founder and executive director of the National Veterans Legal Services Program, that he presented before the Senate Committee on Veteran Affairs just a few weeks ago on April 28, 2021. Here are some key parts of his presentation, which I am directly quoting to give him and his organization credit. And I quote, "Since 1981, NVLSP, an independent, nonprofit veteran service organization, has been dedicated to ensuring that our government lives up to its obligations to provide our 22 million veterans and active service members the VA and military department benefits they have earned due to disabilities resulting from their military service to our country. At NVLSP, we have a uniform code, which is to serve those who have served us. NVLSP strongly supports the need for legislation of the type pending before the committee that addresses entitlement to disability and death compensation due to exposure during military service to toxic substances. The need for this legislation is particularly acute for exposure to A, the toxic fumes spewed by the 250 open-air burn pits used by the U.S. military departments in Southwest Asia, which parenthetically means places like Afghanistan, Iraq, and surrounding countries, to dispose of solid waste, including instead of building safer mechanisms such as incinerators, and B, exposure to toxic herbicides used by the U.S. military departments in Southeast Asia, meaning Vietnam, during the Vietnam War, Thailand, and some other places. NVLSP urges the committee, in considering the bills before it, to add legislative language that focuses on two issues of great importance. Number one, the need for the government to begin forthwith to conduct a scientifically valid epidemiologic study of the adverse health effects of military personnel exposed to open-air burn pits in Southwest Asia. And two, entitlement to retroactive disability and death compensation for veterans and surviving family members exposed to Agent Orange in Vietnam due to diseases that are newly accorded presumptive service-connected status due to such exposure. Now, as a side note, I'm going to add here for those of you wondering, you know, we've got a $25 word here or term, epidemiologic study. What does that mean? Well, basically, it means the types of studies that measures the risk of illness in a particular population that's been exposed to some problem, and they compare that to the risks to an identical population that had not been exposed. So those that's essentially what the NVLSP is asking Congress to have the government do, to make sure that they're doing scientifically valid studies of the adverse health effects suffered by military personnel exposed to the open-air burn pits. Now, we've been talking about this as a side note here. We've been talking about the open-air burn pits since our first year on the show, since the fall of 2017. We've had many guests on the show about it. At one point, we had a film director who had done a film about it called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. So it's an issue we've continued to cover, and over the last, you know, 3.5 years, Rick, I know we've been talking about the need for this very same thing, but taking it a step further, that what the government needs to do is do the studies and then create a presumptive list like they already have for more than a dozen diseases connected to Agent Orange and a number of diseases connected to the toxic water, contaminated water at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. So NVLSP, in their presentation to the Senate committee, emphasizing, among other things, these two issues, the need for studies and then also ongoing issues of retroactive compensation related to Agent Orange. So before I go into more detail about this, Rick, any impressions on this?
No, it's just, like you said, David, we've been highlighting this on our shows for quite some time now. And like anything in Congress, you know, this is the slow roll going uphill. And it's kind of it's unfortunate because just like we've seen with the Agent Orange and the presumption diseases there, and, you know, here it is, how many years since Agent Orange was first passed and the presumption has been applied? And, you know, up in 6 months ago, they amended and added three more. Well, that's great, but what does that also mean? It means that probably a lot of veterans died before they got the benefit of the amendment to that presumption. Well, the same thing with the burn pits. You know, hopefully Congress will finally do what they're charged to do, which is to do the presumptive diseases for these veterans who served in those conditions. Unfortunately, a lot of them will have died by the time Congress acted. So that's the upsetting thing. And, you know, same thing with the Blue Water veterans. You know, we see this over and over and over again. I hate to keep beating a dead horse, but it just keeps coming back to the money. They don't want to pay the veteran. So that's my only comment on there. So back to you.
Yep. Well, let me. I want to quote a few other parts from the NVLSP's presentation. And going back to the issue of an epidemiologic study of veterans exposed to burn pit fumes, according to the NVLSP, quote, the need for legislation governing the adjudication of claims based on exposure to toxins from burn pits cannot be overstated. Although the VA currently presumes that more than a dozen different cancers and other diseases are associated with exposure to Agent Orange, the VA does not currently presume that any disease has a positive association with exposure to burn pit smoke. It decides disability claims based on exposure to burn pit smoke on a case-by-case basis. Because of the general skepticism the VA has to disability claims based on toxic exposures, these are difficult claims to win. Veterans exposed to toxins from burn pits need and rarely have access to attorney representation and medical experts who can provide medical opinions linking exposure to the specific toxins involved and the veteran's specific disease. As a result, VA statistics show that it has denied more than 80% of the claims that have been filed for diseases allegedly due to exposure to toxins from burn pits, unquote. The NVLSP presentation continues by saying, and I quote, the NVLSP strongly supports several bills that are before the committee today that address the need for presumptive service connection for diseases due to exposure to burn pit fumes, specifically S-454, S-927, and S-952. These bills incorporate a very important VA benefits principle that has been consistently recognized by Congress and the VA over many decades whenever Congress or the VA has accorded presumptive service-connected status to a disease due to exposure to a toxic substance. That principle is that presumptive service-connected status is warranted when the available scientific evidence shows that there exists an epidemiologic statistical association between exposure and disease. Both Congress and the VA have made clear that this Epidemiologic Statistical Association is a lower standard than a strict tort-like cause and effect association. And this lower standard is warranted due to our nation's gratitude and solicitude to those who defended our country in military service, unquote. So there's a lot there. It's basically that the NVLSP is reminding Congress that, you know, that in the past, a consistently applied principle has been, you know, that there is a relatively low threshold of statistical association between, you know, the exposure to these toxic substances and particular diseases. And that makes it tough to understand why both Congress itself and the VA have been slow rolling this whole thing with the burn pits. You know, we've been talking about this on our show since the fall of 2017, but we're not the first ones to be bringing it up, you know, for years before. And we've had guests on our show before on this topic. So, you know, it looks like, and we predicted, and others predicted, that, you know, it looks like it was going to be this generation's Agent Orange, that the VA and Congress were going to drag this out, and that's exactly what's happening. It's good that they're, you know, trying to make some progress by saying, let's study this, let's have more scientific studies. But on the other hand, what, are they completely blind to the fact that the Environmental Protection Agency, OSHA, and many other organizations, government and non-government organizations, are they blind to the fact that those organizations have been studying the health effects of various substances and chemicals and pollutants? You know, why do they think we have environmental laws in the United States relatively strict, you know, we've had for decades? It's because of recognition of the health hazards, among other reasons. And they ought to be turning to those things, because there's already clear evidence that what they were burning in those open burn pits was practically every imaginable thing you'd find anywhere, and adding to that all sorts of military equipment and fuels that they would use to ignite these pits, and then the size of the pits, sometimes the size of many football fields, burning 24 hours a day. Congress can make it easy. You know, Rick, this reminds me of what did Congress do in 2012 with the Camp Lejeune contaminated drinking water issue? They passed a statute. They didn't even punt it over to the VA as an administrative agency to further study. Congress passed a law that said, you know, if you come down with one of these 12 conditions, they'll presume it was due, and you'll get health benefits. Now, what the Congress failed to do, and they kicked the can over to the VA, was for disability compensation, and it took another 5 years or so for the Lejeune disability compensation presumptive list, which only had 8 diseases on it. So, you know, this is going to be a long haul, and fortunately, groups like the National Veterans Legal Services Program and Military Veterans Advocacy, these are two of the, you know, top-tier organizations with greatest expertise and very aggressive education, litigation, and legislative programs. So I've been rambling on here enough, Rick. We got lots more to talk about, but anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, just one more point. You know, we have a lot of, I don't know what the number is, but there are a fair amount of people in Congress who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. And you'd think, you know, they know what's going on with these burn pits. You know, it doesn't, you know, take an imagination to know what happened over there. And they experienced it. And so what are they doing about it? I mean, they're sitting there, right? They're in a perfect position to help out these other veterans. So let's see some action.
Right. Yeah. Well, thanks to the NVLSP for their actions, and hope they will stay on top of it. And the other thing I want to emphasize before we turn to some other news is the other issue that I mentioned, the National Veterans Legal Services Program discussed in their presentation April 28th, which is the issue of entitlement to retroactive VA compensation for claims based on diseases that were recently added, recently accorded presumptive service connection due to Agent Orange. As our listeners know, we've discussed on previous shows that last December's National Defense Authorization Act, in that law, Congress granted three new diseases presumptive service-connected status due to their association with exposure to Agent Orange. And those three are Parkinsonism, bladder cancer, and hypothyroidism. For those of you that really like looking at the law or you have trouble sleeping at night, the statutory citation is found in 38 U.S. Code Section 1116A and then a whole bunch of other subsections. But if you can find your way to 38 U.S.C. 1116A, subparagraph A, you'll find what I'm talking about. Now, one of the bills now being considered by the Senate committee, which is S-810, which the NVLSP supports, would grant two additional diseases presumptive service-connected status due to association with exposure to Agent Orange. And one of those is hypertension, high blood pressure, which, Rick, you know, we've heard that being kicked around for years now, so it'll be interesting to see if that actually gets passed. But in any event, according to the National Veteran Legal Services Program, quote, both of these legislative efforts are praiseworthy. Both of these legislative efforts are praiseworthy. They both leave disabled veterans and their survivors with half a loaf or even less. Specifically, they require VA to pay them disability and death compensation benefits if they suffered or died from one of these diseases on a prospective basis only. That is, with an effective compensation date of no earlier than the date of enactment of those changes in the law. But they do not by themselves require the VA to pay benefits retroactive to the date of the first claim the veteran or survivor filed for that disease, which could well be decades before the date of enactment. This stands in sharp contrast to the way veterans and their survivors are treated by VA if they suffer or died from one of the other diseases recognized by the VA associated with Agent Orange prior to last year's National Defense Authorization Act. Now, I would add, as a side note, Rick, we see the same issue, the same problem with the Camp Lejeune presumptive list. You know what I mean? And I've tried to get the NVLSP to jump on board that bandwagon, and I'm going to have to continue because the same issue is there, as we know very well from some cases. Now, as some background on this issue, and way back in 1987, and this was before Congress had even created the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. So back then in 1987, the highest you could appeal to was the Board of Veterans Appeals. So back at that time frame in 1987, the NVLSP, when they were fighting something in federal court outside the VA, they went to a U.S. district court. And in that court case, they certified a nationwide class action. The name of the case is now famous. It's Niemer versus U.S. Veterans Administration. And even the name of the VA has changed because back then it was the Veterans Administration, and since then it's the Department of Veteran Affairs that's made a cabinet level, and they changed the name to. But in any event, in the Niemer case, it's spelled N-E-H-A-M-E-R, very famous, nationwide class action case on behalf of more than 2 million Vietnam vets and their survivors, including those who had been denied VA benefits for a condition allegedly associated with herbicide exposure, and those who would be eligible to file for such benefits in the future. And it was a Northern District of California case. Now, the court also certified NVLSP lawyers as the counsel for all those class actions. That's why if you think you have an Agent Orange so-called Niemer class action issue, definitely check out NVLSP.org's website. But in any event, NVLSP noted in their presentation that in the November 2014 report by the Congressional Research Service, veterans exposed to Agent Orange legislative history, litigation, and current issues, as well as the Nehmer decision, Congress enacted the Agent Orange Act of 1991 at 38 U.S.C. Section 1116. The Agent Orange Act, also known as the AOA, required the VA to contract with an independent agency, then the National Academy of Sciences, to review the emerging scientific studies on the adverse health effects of exposure to the herbicide and to prepare a report for the VA every 2 years with its conclusion. Now, as a sidebar, no, the Agent Orange Act was passed in 1991. Our troops, you know, the end of our involvement in Vietnam was in 1973. So 18 years passed before they even passed the Agent Orange Act, and now that's 30 years ago. And, Rick, you know how many changes there have been to the list. It's ongoing. In any event, the Agent Orange Act also required the Secretary of Veterans Affairs to decide within a specified period of time after receiving National Academy of Science report whether to amend VA regulations by according presumptive service-connected status to additional diseases. That's been an ongoing problem with the VA. So basically, what we're looking at here is that the NVLSP has continued to advocate for veterans and their families, but has pointed out that the VA has not paid retroactive compensation to Vietnam vets suffering from or surviving family members of Vietnam vets who died from any of the three diseases that were added by last year's National Defense Authorization Act. It means that these veterans and their survivors are being disadvantaged to a dramatic degree compared to the hundreds of thousands of veterans survivors to whom the VA has paid an aggregate of literally billions of dollars in retroactive disability and death benefits. NVLSP is trying to get Congress's attention to that and urges Congress to enact legislation requiring the VA to take all the steps it's taken in the past regarding the Nehmer consent decree for these three new diseases. And hopefully Congress will do that. That's in addition, NVLSP says that Congress should pass Senate Bill 810, which would grant service connection status to hypertension and also a rather obscure condition called monoclonal gammopathy of undetermined significance. The acronym is MGUS, a service connected status due to association with exposure to Agent Orange. So we'll see where that goes. For those of you that are really interested, those of you that may follow this more closely, maybe if you work for veteran groups. Two other resources, of course, are the websites veterans.senate.gov and veterans.house.gov, which are the websites for the House and Senate veteran committees. So on sort of a final note, I know I've gone into a lot of detail here. If you want more information on this, go to nvlsp.org, National Veterans Legal Services Program. And if you're able to, donate, because it's a very worthy organization and they could use your financial support. So it's nblsp.org. Back over to you, Rick.
Well, I guess we're getting close to the...
Well, we got a few minutes. Here? There's. I don't know if you want to talk about the press release on the...
home loan?
On the home loan program, or you want me to...
No, that's it. May 4th, press release from the VA. May is National Moving Month, and many veterans may find themselves moving to a new address as they take advantage of the Department of Veteran Affairs' expanded home loan program, which now includes additional benefits for eligible borrowers. VA is currently implementing Public Law 116-315, containing three key loan provisions for Vietnam War-era veterans, eligible National Guard members, and service members, veterans, and certain surviving spouses with VA-guaranteed loans. The law, known as the Johnny Isaacson and David P. Rowe, M.D. Veterans Health Care and Benefits Improvement Act of 2020, offers new and renewed homeownership possibilities, said Acting VA Undersecretary for Benefits Thomas Murphy. These few changes can have a significant impact on our current homeowners, especially for those who were previously ineligible but now have the opportunity to use the benefits they have earned. According to the U.S. Department of Transportation, an estimated 35 million people will relocate this year, with most taking place between the start of the peak season for moving in May through September. It's possible that these numbers could increase with the following expansions to the program. One, expanded criteria for eligibility among Vietnam-era veterans to those whose wartime service began on or after November 1st, 1955. Previous start date qualified for the VA home loan benefit as a Vietnam veteran was February 28, 1961. Enhanced access to service members and some veterans of the National Guard. The new statutory authority extends eligibility to members of the National Guard who have been mobilized to perform full-time guard duty for at least 90 cumulative days, with 30 days of that service being consecutive. Finally, service members, veterans, and certain survivors with VA guaranteed home loans or VA direct loans whose residences have been substantially damaged or destroyed in an area that has been declared a major disaster by the president are now eligible to be charged a first-time use funding fee on a VA guaranteed loan rather than a subsequent use funding fee. The borrower's next VA guaranteed loan must be for the repair of the damaged or destroyed residence or purchase or construction of a new home closed within 3 years of the presidential declaration of the disaster. Back to you, David.
Okay. I mentioned at the top of the show we had two organizations I wanted to share insight. The other one is the Military Veterans Advocacy, MVA. Their website is militaryveteransadvocacy.org, militaryveteransadvocacy.org. John Wells, a lawyer and retired Navy commander, has been our guest many times on the show the past few years. And one of their projects has been to establish a Bill of the Week program. And with this program, they will highlight critical legislation that will benefit veterans. If you go to their website, militaryveteransadvocacy.org, you'll see on the top of the page, click on the word projects, and then on the drop-down menu, you'll see a link to the Bill of the Week projects. And on that, Military Veterans Advocacy makes it very simple. They summarize every week some key bills in Congress. They'll discuss brief summary of it, and then they provide you a link you can click on. It's a actnow.io link specific to each of those bills. You click on that, you have to add your name, your email address, your address, your zip code, for instance, and it'll identify your representative in the House of Representatives and your two U.S. senators. And then with a few clicks of the button, you can send support message to those, and I know it works because I've used it and I've gotten responses back from my representatives. So check that out. Go to militaryveteransadvocacy.org, click on projects, and you'll see the Bill of the Week project. Just real quickly, because I know we're running out of time, one of the bills that were highlighted last week was a bill that there's a House number and a Senate number. House Bill 2580 and Senate 1151, and this was a subject that I have to tell you, Rick, in my many years of representing veterans, I haven't had the need to represent anyone that deals with this, but I found it very interesting, so I thought I'd share it real quick. It deals with the treatment of veterans who are participating in the cleanup of a radiation-exposed area in an area called Palomares, Spain. For those of you that may have no idea what I'm talking about, in 1966, January 1966, an Air Force B-52 collided with an Air Force KC-135 tanker during a mid-air refueling at 31,000 feet. The KC-135, full of fuel, ignited, killed all four crew members. The B-52 broke apart. Three of the seven crew members were killed. It's surprising that four of them survived, but they did. But anyway, the relevance to what I'm talking about is that the B-52 was carrying four thermonuclear bombs, and whenever the B-52 fell apart, they all fell down to earth. Three of them landed on land during this small fishing village called Palomares in Spain, and the fourth one ended up in the Mediterranean Sea, where it was eventually recovered. But for the ones that landed on the land, Air Force personnel, other military personnel that were in Spain and were that could be brought there, were then sent to on kind of a search and recovery and also a cleanup area. And without proper cleanup protection equipment, basically personal protective gear, and they were exposed to the radioactive plutonium that contaminated an area that was about a little more than 3/4 of a square mile in size. So in any event, there are veterans alive today that have over the course of time have suffered from the radioactive exposure, and this bill is to help them out. I thought that was pretty interesting and something that it was just a reminder of, you know, just another way in which people can get hurt and killed in the service of their country. Anyway, we're about out of time here, Rick, so why don't we go back over to you for our Coaching Into Care program.
Yeah, the Coaching Into Care program. This helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your vet. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. It's operating hours on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, Coaching Into Care is 1-888-823-7458. I also want to remind everybody about the suicide and affecting our veterans or veterans who are in a crisis of any kind coming back from combat. The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call that number, 1-800-273-8255, and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with those problems. Once again, Veterans Crisis Line can help. 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, Dave.
Thanks, Rick. It's time for us to go. I'd like to thank all of you for listening and thank our sponsors, Corey and Hurley Law Group. I'd like to thank our producer, BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.